You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to and hopefully watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 2/11/21. Well, you know, life can be a slippery slope. You start out, you do a little something wrong. Like maybe it's you don't have any change in your pocket and you just grab the newspaper at the newspaper stand. And hey, it's only a buck or two. What's the big deal? Nobody's really hurt. But then one thing leads to another, And before you know it, you're working on Wall Street and you're responsible for billions. It's been entrusted to you. It's all about trust after all. And then before you know it, there's a knock on the door and there's a couple of guys with badges want to talk to you. And that's the story similar to it, what you're going to hear with, I would call it a happy ending. First, I'd like to get your emails, your opinion. Have you encountered such people that you trusted on Wall Street and wound up on the short end of the trade? Well, send us the email to kl@carrielutz.com. Right now, we've got Tom Harden with us now. Tom, a.k.a. Tipper X, one of the youngest stellar performers on Wall Street, found yourself in a position, Tom, where you cut some corners, shall we say, and you were the subject of a federal investigation.
Thanks, Carrie. Yeah, I'm Tom Harden. About 10 years ago, I was known as Tipper X. Over 85 people on Wall Street were charged with insider trading. I think I may have been the youngest individual charged at 28 years old, worked at a small hedge fund, only made $46,000 on my trade. So I made, I think, the third lowest of the 85 people. I rationalized why I did it. I told myself everybody else was doing it at the time. There were some bigger names like Rajaratnam and other big players who I knew were doing it. I got some tips. I traded, threw my career away. A few years ago, the FBI called me and I thought, oh my God, what do these guys want now? I had helped them build some of these bigger cases as an undercover informant, Tipper X. And the FBI extended me the invitation to talk to their rookie agents about my case in 2016. So that spawned a second career for me, which I hope is better than my first, of going around sharing my story with Wall Street firms. Just, hey, here's where I was when I was a young person, very type A, focused on only the short term. And here's what happened. And here's how it could happen in your organization. So now my relationships are more talking to the ex-FBI, ex-SEC people about securities fraud, market manipulation, and where it might happen again in the future.
All right. So it's kind of an interesting tale there of being lost and then redemption. How widespread was the practice then of insider trading, and how widespread do you think it is now?
Back then, it was pretty widespread. Like in the mid 2000s, 2005, 2006, hedge funds would hire people from technology firms to be their research analysts who could just call their old contacts at their old firms to get the quarterly earnings information, so the firm could place a trade, because the companies only report four times a year and tech stocks move a lot on those reports. So if you have that information before anybody else, you can make a profitable trade. And they also had knowledge about mergers and acquisitions. Company A buys company B, buy company B before and the stock goes up. So it was rampant at the time. 60% of these M&A transactions at that time, the target companies went up before the news came out. So this was all in the market. I think today it's gone down a bit, but criminals have been more creative in terms of how they go about insider trading. Now it morphs into hacking issuer websites, overseas hackers stealing corporate information. So the fraudsters are always a little bit ahead of the regulators and law enforcement, and it usually takes a few years for the SEC and the FBI to catch up.
Yeah, so back then your schemes were kind of simplistic, really, compared to what's around today. And then you found yourself effectively giving TED Talks to the FBI on how to identify and how to pursue and how to build a case. And sounds like they still need your help there, because when you look at GameStop, 140% short position, That's like, how can you short more shares than exist? Even shorting 50% of the shares in a company would seem to be extraordinarily difficult. And yet, and short sell, naked short selling, as it's called, or phantom shares, is a practice that was specifically outlawed in the United States. I know in Canada, they've got a couple of loopholes, but I know that there are big hedge funds that feed their trades through these obscure broker dealers to pursue these naked shorts. Look, I know you can't enforce every law. Like, if you arrested all jaywalkers or litterers, you know, there wouldn't be anybody walking down the street anymore, let's face it. Right. But some things like this, where really they wound up doing themselves in, sounds like there should, if there isn't a law against it, there should be. And if there is a law against it, then it should be enforced, because the public, really, their faith in markets, it seems like everything's rigged, Tom.
Yeah, I think to your second point there, there is a law against it and it needs to be enforced. It hasn't been. For me, when I look at the saga, everybody talks about the bubble being in the GameStop stock. But I think before that happened, the bubble was in these hedge funds being able to be short over 140% of the float in these stocks. Technically, they're not supposed to be able to do that, but because there was no enforcement of the regulation, they were allowed to, as you said, go through other intermediaries and build these short positions. The stocks that were lent to them were able to be lent out to more than one hedge fund. So these hedge funds were massively short these $3 stocks, which again, if I'm a risk manager at a hedge fund and you're short all the float in a $3 stock, that can only end one way potentially. It could go to zero, but there's also the outcome, which we just saw a couple of weeks ago, where it could go against you the other way. So I think the SEC first will have to look, and we'll see now with the new chairman coming in under the new administration, if they're going to focus more on the retail people on Reddit or more on the hedge funds and how this was set up.
And that's a great question. And it's usually the little guys that wind up taking the bullet and the big guys walk. So ex-hedge funder, I'm sure you've watched the show Billions, right?
Yes, that's right.
All right. So it's mostly comic, mostly kind of, you know, fictional. But I think the mindset of the Bobby Axelrods of the world is pretty spot on, isn't it?
It is. They have some great consultants. They really got the mindset right. Yes, it is made for Hollywood. So a little bit of it is, you know, maybe not, you know, not happening in the real world, but it's not far from the truth. I mean, these are young people. I was 28 years old. I had the potential to make millions of dollars. It was all lined up in front of me. And you're very short-term focused. You know, you're just thinking about that next trade, that next amount of money I can make. Again, you can get up to that line with my case with insider trading. I looked around and felt like, well, this law wasn't being enforced. Not the same as naked short selling, but kind of a similar dynamic of, I know it's illegal, but it's not being enforced. These other guys are doing it, and I fell into that trap. So it'll be interesting today if the SEC starts to focus now on naked shorting, which I suspect they will.
All right. So one thing I just want to talk about. So my opinion is it's not all the Redditors. I think they might have to some extent been manipulated. They might have to some extent been used. But it was the hedge funds, like that one SunVest. They made $700 million going long. And just like the hedge funds love to disseminate damning reports on companies saying they're going out of business, get out of this stock, you know, worst investment of the year. Yeah. They kind of turned the tables and got the word out there. This is the best company since Tesla, and you need to be buying it. So maybe this will act as like a self-regulating mechanism for hedge funds, because when they build these excessive short positions, they're going to find themselves very susceptible, and the brokers as well. They were endangered by the whole, by the kind of coordinated attack on all of these overshorted stocks.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Today's show is brought to you by Mustango River Resources. Their flagship projects are located in Kirkland Lake, an established gold camp that has historically produced over 70 million ounces of gold. The Kirkland West Project is a high-grade gold project beside Kirkland Lake Gold's world-class Macassa Gold Mine, one of the highest-grade mines in the world. Umeja Project is an advanced-stage project with 600,000-plus ounces of gold along the Cadillac Break, 25 kilometers east of Macassa. Their projects have the potential to transform into another world-class mining camp in the Kirkland Lake District. Make sure you go over to mistango.com. That's mistango.com. Take a look and sign up for notifications. Stock is traded on the Canadian Stock Exchange, ticker symbol MIS. For more information and to sign up for notifications, go to mistango.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything like anything now, this event happens, the hedge funds are very much focused on what's the next GameStop and AMC on Reddit, and they're tracking that. They have algorithms. They pay millions of dollars to consultants to help them track that. I think they're definitely going forward, going to be very cautious about, are they shorted, heavily shorted stocks? And then some hedge funds like Cinvest actually had a fundamental thesis last year. Hey, this is a cheap stock. They got lucky with this run up. And I think they sold the day, I read that article, they sold the day where Elon tweeted game stonk. That was kind of the top, right. I think. They were able to sell it that day. But the question I think for the SEC is, were there other hedge funds a few weeks ago on Reddit under these pseudonyms with multiple accounts kind of spraying misinformation? If there were, we don't know that, and that's a problem. But I think in general, as we said, the retail guy pumping up the stock, there's not really deception here. Everybody, I think, most people that jumped on Wall Street Bets, the millions of people that joined, I think they kind of knew they were playing a game. Hopefully it wasn't people's life savings. Hopefully it was their pizza money or that type of thing, which are kind of the stories we're hearing. I lost my $300, that type of thing. But you also had to know, I didn't see any kind of deception about misrepresenting the fundamentals of GameStop. Everybody kind of knew this was a game and wanted to get out. So the manipulation, the deception may be coming from the hedge fund side if they can prove that they were also jacking this up and trying to use, you know, spread it out over several anonymous accounts. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, there isn't much chance of that as Bobby Axelrod seeing the inside of a jail cell.
Yeah.
I rather doubt this is going to happen because if anything, they know how to cover their tracks. Yeah. But I found it fascinating that they were able to get out of their position at this enormous profit. But the GameStoppers, this is the difference between pros and individuals. When pros have a profit, they take it. When individuals have a profit, the greed lights go on and they want more, more, more without any regard for the fact that things go parabolic, they go down. So as far as your career and what you've gone through, the suffering you went through, what do you think the most important thing you learned?
Yeah, I just think you have to know yourself. I didn't have any self-awareness of how I could fall into something like I did. I thought I was a great guy. And, you know, I didn't have the self-awareness to know like where my blind spots were, where I could fall into this rationalization of, oh, everybody seems to be doing this, even though they're breaking the rule. It's okay if I do it too. So today, I always tell people to know yourself and also to have a mentor in your 20s. I didn't have any mentors in my 20s. Had I been looking out to somebody who was maybe 10 years older than me, an ethical person who did really well, and talked to them once a month about what I was seeing in the industry at that time, the right person playing by the rules would have slapped me around. Tom, why would you ever cross that line? You're already doing so well. So a lot of tough lessons learned in my 20s, but what I try to give back to people today is to kind of learn from my mistakes.
You kind of remind me of Buddy Fox from Wall Street. You know, you want to get ahead so badly, but you're already at the top. I mean, it was just a waiting game at that point. You just perform well, you do your job, and you're going to be richly rewarded. So, you know, I guess you weren't really thinking of the downside risks involved in your behavior.
I never considered the idea of ever being caught because I was trading in such a small amount of shares in my firm. And I never thought about the money I would make. I only made $46,000, the SEC told me later. And people are usually shocked by that. They're like, I thought you were Tipper X. I thought you made millions. Like, no, the reality is, and it often is the reality, it's not a lot of money that the average person, you know, makes from these things.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me about your what you're doing today, your career today?
Yeah, so I had no plans ever to share my story. I was very, you know, disappointed myself, and I threw my career away in my 20s. The FBI called me in 2016. My phone rang and I thought, oh my God, you know, it doesn't say FBI, it just says restricted. And I told my wife they're calling me again. She's like, what'd you do now? Like, I don't know. They asked me to come speak to their rookie agents in 2016 about my cooperation. I was the key cooperator. And I started cold emailing every compliance officer in Manhattan. I'd love to come talk to your team about my experience, how it happened to me, how it could happen to your people. Started slow, but then it started picking up in the last couple of years before COVID. Was going around kind of as a keynote speaker around behavioral sort of ethics, compliance, white collar crime. Obviously COVID's impacted that quite a bit, but I'm still doing virtual talks, virtual training sessions, just trying to make people aware of their potential blind spots or what might be happening that they don't see. And also doing risk assessments for companies, what divisions, what people inside the company might be more privy to going rogue.
And, you know, as a recovering attorney, I've seen this situation with numerous people in numerous professions, businesses, et cetera. You know, a lot of times people go down the dark path. They follow the dark side because there are drug problems, alcoholism, gambling, and other assorted addictions. In your case, you were just seemed to be like naive and just like not really weighing the consequences of your actions at all.
Yeah, when the fraud happens, there's typically a fraud triangle. There's a need. So the need is usually something in somebody's personal life, as you mentioned, which wasn't really for me. I was 28, happily married, kind of like living a regular life. There's an opportunity to do it. So the opportunity at my firm was there for this to happen. But the bigger piece for me, the third part of the triangle, is there's rationalization. And boy, did I rationalize my actions. I said, everybody's doing it. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm just only buying about a small amount of stock. I told myself, I really have no idea if what I'm getting is inside information. It might just be a rumor. But then it happened the first time exactly as this person said. And I did it again and again and again. So I did it four times. So rationalization for me, self-deception by reasoning, definitely contributed. And we see rationalization. It's like the human condition. We see it, you know, everywhere, all these types of crimes in society. So it's here to stay.
Yeah, it's amazing. People can rationalize anything, any behavior, any of their actions. I mean, you just total self-deception. Yep. And really, I guess it goes back to Shakespeare's quote, to thine own self be true. If you're true to yourself, then you know exactly what you're doing at any given time, and you know the consequences of it. But in the exuberance of youth, sometimes you just get wrapped up in stuff and you really don't think about it. Whereas 20 years later, you look back on that person, Tom, and you say, how could he have been that stupid?
Yeah, I do. I'm 43. I was 28. So I've had the 15 long years to think about it. How could I have been so dumb and look back? But, you know, that situation could have destroyed me. A few people that were charged committed suicide. So luckily, I didn't go that path. It can define me forever, or it can develop me into something else. So what I've been trying to do the last few years is to have a more prosperous second career here, sharing the story with companies and doing these risk analyses on where potential blind spots might be. So
hey, well, it sounds like a worthy undertaking. We wish you the best of luck. If people want to find out about you, books, et cetera, where should you go?
So it's my website is tipperx.com, T-I-P-P-E-R-X.com. The book is in process now. So that's been what I've been using my downtime during quarantine here to write. And so that should be out hopefully later this year.
Well, I see a movie in your future here because I think the story is really a great story. And the fact, maybe not from your standpoint because you were insignificant, but you had an oversized impact on the industry and on key players in the industry. And perhaps that's the greatest contribution of your time there. We appreciate any questions for Tom. Why don't you send us an email to kl@carrylutz.com. Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And you can sign up for our free newsletter there. Tom, been a pleasure. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks so much, Carrie. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.